From the home of the Codebreakers and the birthplace of modern computing, this is the Bletchley Park podcast. Welcome.
Welcome.
Welcome to the Bletchley Park podcast Christmas special 2014. I don't know when we'll ever be able to look back on quite such a year as 2014, a landmark year.
We knew it was going to be a busy year, but I don't think we realised quite how busy it was going to be.
Transformational is not an understatement. We're standing outside Block C at the moment, where you now arrive to be welcomed to Bletchley Park in our new visitor centre. And what a difference. This was derelict. We had a confusing entrance. Now it makes sense and it tells you the story. Let's go inside. What happened in January, Mark?
The year actually started on the very last day of last year for me, because I was in the early hours recording an episode of the Angry History podcast with our friends in the States, Owen and Dean.
Remind me what they wanted to talk to you about.
They fight against historical inaccuracies, so they've done their own special on the Coventry myth, and we gave them a recording of Sir Arthur Bonsall,
who sadly passed away recently.
He did, unfortunately.
And it was a nice piece because it looked at the human side as well as the machines and achievements, and that's what we've strived with this restoration. The interpretation looks very much at this is a story about people. I think Alexandra Fitzsimmons from the company Event, who did a lot of the interpretation and our exhibitions in the new restored Bletchley Park, once said this is a story about people, and I think that hits the nub of it, doesn't it? As you now arrive, you alight the train at Bletchley Station.
When I first saw these train doors, it sets the scene, doesn't it? From the very start, telling the important side of it, which is the story of the people who worked here and served here.
Further here, we've referenced this Coventry myth, and we've Angry History, we've done an entire podcast on it.
This was so great of you, Mark.
Yeah, thank you so much.
We knew that Sir Arthur was coming over to Bletchley, and it was just a no-brainer. We need to ask him this question for you guys, basically. And he was just no problem with it at all. Oh, of course I will. Absolutely.
This was a major get, as you say. I just kept thinking that when you told us that you talked to him and then mm-hmm. he agreed to let us use it. And we can go right into this clip of Sir Arthur talking about the Coventry myth and what he really thinks about it. And if anybody's out there is still sort of believes this conspiracy theory, I think the way he puts it here is so succinct. I mean, we spent 80 minutes, whatever we spent on it. We didn't come as near the truth and authority that's in this man's voice. So let's give a listen.
It is a complete myth. There's no information relevant to the attack, but it wasn't the sort of information that could have been reported as precise evidence. There were pointers to the fact there might be activity, no date or anything accurate like that. Those reports, warnings of raids on places in Britain were really of no real intelligence value.
The hut is what we're exhibiting, and what we're doing is we're trying to show off this hut in a way that allows people to imagine what it was like in the war. So you really will be able to walk through here and imagine the people who worked here and feel a bit like you've met them. It should really be about imagining atmosphere. This is a story about people and what their lives were like, and we want people to be able to imagine that.
So phase one of the restoration was completed with royalty coming back, this time with the Duchess of Cambridge. Her grandmother and her great-aunt both worked here together during the war. They were twin sisters. And, of course, the stranger-than-fiction story, you just couldn't make it up, of Alan Turing, hit the big screens this year. What else do you need?
Yeah, we've had royalty and Hollywood, but I think we should start with a bit of a Christmas feel, really.
We should.
The Three Bells, who you've heard on the podcast before, got a charity single out for Christmas. They're raising money for the Royal British Legion. They've kindly allowed us to just play in our episode with their Christmas single.
How very festive.
Those
in January, the Bletchley Circle returned to our small screens, and it was a hit once again. Sarah Harding, the director of the second part of the second series, you've got to get that right, her mother worked here during the war, and it was a fascinating journey for her to find out more. And she set about her research even more diligently when we asked her to come back and give a talk a few months later as part of the Bletchley Park Presents series of lectures.
Yeah, she spoke to me and she said she's learned even more since, partly for her talk, but also I think it's like this place gets into your bones, doesn't it? And you just need to learn more and more. And that's what Sarah's been doing.
The secrecy is so very appealing. It makes you want to dig away and peel away the layers, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's what it is, isn't it?
Rachel Sterling, one of the actors, said a lovely piece in the press conference promoting that second series, having recently read Mavis Beatty's obituary in The Telegraph.
All right. Here we got it. Turn over. Every camera.
Sound speed. Mark, please, around sound.
Okay. 572, take 3, A camera mark.
Onboard B camera.
Okay. Camera action. Action, ladies.
Cut.
We can't, thank you.
One of the reasons I do drama is to just, you know, get people feeling, talking and thinking about their lives in a different way. And for Bletchley Circle, it's thinking about, for me, very much, it's the legacy of what our post-war generation of women could, you know, have had, the opportunities we've had, and how tricky it was for them to come from a world of, you know, where women couldn't get mortgages, weren't expected to, you know, stay in work if they were married. The strides.
Suppressed, yeah.
Very suppressed.
What do you hope your mother will say when she's watched this series? What do you expect her to say? They're two different things.
I just hope she'll smile. I hope it will just make her feel recognised. I'm proud.
There was recently that wonderful Mavis Beatty who just died, and there was a wonderful obit I read last night. She was 92, I think, wasn't she, when she died? And her husband did the secrets to her grave. I mean, she spoke a little, but not much. But there was a wonderful quote that Dilly Knox said about Mavis Beatty, whose original name was Lever, and her other code-breaking friend, Somebody Rock. And the two of them had cracked a little bit of code, and Dilly Knox had said, "Give me a lever and a rock and I will move the universe." And of course he was being subversive about it, because that was her single name and nobody knew what on earth he was referring to. But yeah, I mean, their stories are still to be told, and I hope that this show has raised a bit the profile of Bletchley Park, and we saw some of the improvements that are taking place there when we were filming there, and the idea that this had anything to do with that brought about such a great pomp and sense of self-importance. but, if it has anything to do with some of the improvements that you're making there now, then it's a source of huge pride to us all.
One of the things I really liked this year was a Living History project. Starting in February half-term, we had professional actors in the mansion.
And they brought it to life like we'd never seen before. They interacted with visitors in character. And you could see people sort of feel quite nervous about it at the beginning. And I think we were all a bit nervous about how it would go down, when people might be too reserved and embarrassed. But they drew them out, and they were obviously very warm and friendly. And it was beautifully done. And it was such a hit. We brought it back in the Easter holidays, and we hope to do it again.
And how in character they stayed was, I thought, remarkable.
Sorrel Meakin, who played the Wren, her grandfather was a bomb maintainer during the war, and he's still with us, and he came to visit, and he came all the way from Devon. He was so excited to see her in character, and I think that must have been the greatest challenge of her career to date, to stay in character while her granddad's there.
And
proud as
cunt.
The shifts can be a little tricky to get your head around at first, but the first shift that you work will be the first week, which is 8 in the morning until 4 in the afternoon. That's quite straightforward, but a week is a week, so that's Monday straight through till Sunday. And then the next week you'll work 4 in the afternoon until 12 at night. That can be a little more tiring. And then depending on where you are in the park, my girls, the other wrens, have 48 hours respite before the night shift. So that's 12 at night until 8 in the morning. Again, that's for 7 days. And then on the last day of that, we then have to do another 4 till 12. Then you can have your 4 days off.
Yes.
Hop on down to London or wherever you like.
Can you tell me what it was like when you first heard that Sorrel had got this part?
Absolutely astounded, absolutely delighted. because, I mean, the connection was so strong, you know. I mean, the very fact that she was going to be on the stage, which I'd been on, and then to hear that she was going to be at Bletchley, where I had connections also, I mean, I just couldn't get over it. So, of course, we had to come up, even though it was quite a long trip, but well worth it.
So does she interact with you in character?
She did. And I find it very difficult because, as I said, am I answering you as a grandfather? Am I answering you as an NCO in the RAF to a Wren? Am I answering you as a person who's just talking to somebody playing a part of a Wren? I didn't know. So
what did she say? She just stayed in character and said, well, I didn't
She
know.
Stayed in character, which was very good.
This must be a proud day.
Absolutely. A very extremely proud grandfather. Extremely proud, yes. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Would you like some bread?
Yes, I'd love some.
This is one of the new additions we've got now after the restoration. So we've got soundscapes around the park, which will suddenly come on and surprise people. I still, every time I hear the Spitfire flying over in one of the trees, I keep looking
for it. Yeah. The huts are large garden sheds, basically. They're fairly fragile as buildings go, and they weren't built to last. Nobody thought more than about 10 years ahead when they first threw them up at the beginning of the war. And come 70 years later, we were preserving them for the nation, for the future, and we did it just in time. I mean, a matter of weeks. Had they not reached that stage when we had the windstorms in March, the site manager who was running the restoration project on the ground said quite confidently, quite firmly, how close we came to losing them. I'm joined by Rob Davies, site manager, who's looked after the project throughout. Can you tell me what went through your mind when we had that severe weather and what stage we were at then?
Well, even when we arrived, we were amazed that the huts were still standing. And the fact that in some places it seemed to be levitating because all the sole plates had disappeared, rotten away. So considering the amount of weather and like heavy rain we've had and the high winds, I would have thought after that they'd probably have fallen down. So severe weather that we've had, I think the days would have been numbered. So I think we probably got there just in the nick of time.
So literally, if we'd have started a year later, after 70 years, then 1 year would have made that difference.
Yeah, exactly. We'd have been pretty close, I'd have thought. You know, windy day, the windy days we had, they could have been on the floor. We did have some damage at Bletchley. I mean, it wasn't significant, but yeah, I think it could have been a lot more dramatic had the huts not been repaired when they were.
Can you imagine trying to explain to people if there'd just been a pile of rubble? I mean, it so nearly was.
Yeah, it would have been. It would have been heartbreaking for everybody because, you know, we were able to salvage a lot of the original fabric of the building, even now when we got here. So that would have been extremely difficult, you know, picking stuff out of a pile of rubble.
We're always interested in finding ways to reach out to people who haven't perhaps thought to take an interest before in the Bletchley Park story, and we want to draw them in. And one way we did that this year was with help from Sarah Dunn from Sarah's Do What Do's. She's a vintage stylist and she ran workshops called 1940s Boutique, and this was a full day and you're immersed, steeped in wartime glamour, and you learn how to do the hair and the makeup. It's great fun. You also get the chance to look around Bletchley Park, of course, as well, and we're bringing those back next year. At the first one of those, a fascinating story emerged from a group of women, two daughters and their mum, whose mother, so mother and grandmother, had worked here, they think, during the war, but like many, she was very secretive about it, hadn't really shared information with her family before she died, unfortunately. But she told a very heartbreaking story. So tell me about your mother. What did you know about what she'd done?
Well, that she worked in London. She says she worked underground a lot because of the bombing. She was in the ATS, and we believe she was a cipher operator. Whether or not she was involved in codes, I have no idea.
And it was just a passing mention, wasn't it, from your father that pointed you towards Bletchley?
Yes, he believed that she may have been in Bletchley. We're not sure. I mean, and so we need to find out a bit more, really.
Did that spark your interest in coming here?
Oh, yes, and the film that's been done about Enigma and the Bletchley Circle, and I mean, it's all very fascinating. My two daughters, Rebecca and Victoria, they have a boy and a girl each, and of course they're all studying the wars at the moment because of the anniversaries coming up. So, I mean, for their sakes, we'd like to find out more.
You do know little snippets, don't you? Tell me about the family wedding.
Rebecca knows more about that.
I went down to South Wales to speak to her sister a couple of weeks ago, and she told me that Nana had found out that her brother had been killed in Italy, before the family knew. The family knew he'd been injured, but they didn't actually know he'd died. And she had to go back to South Wales for a family wedding without being able to tell the family that he was actually dead. And they were all talking about, oh, well, you know, let's hope he gets sent home, let's hope he survives. And she was just sobbing at the wedding and they couldn't understand why, because she knew and they didn't.
Can you imagine holding on to a secret like that?
Unbelievable. I couldn't have done that. It wouldn't have surprised me that she could have done that.
Yeah,
she definitely. Keep a secret, all right. Mm. It's so sad that we've not got her here to talk to anymore, but we'll try and find out what we can.
Mm. Find out a little bit more.
Mm. And get a lovely hairdo into the bargain today.
Absolutely. Oh, yes. This is a wonderful day.
Going out for family to look in all glam, won't we?
Yeah.
Lovely.
Enjoy.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Sit under the apple tree with anyone else but me. Anyone else but me. Anyone else but me. No, no, no. Don't sit under the apple tree with anyone else but me. Till I come marching home. I don't go walking down Lover's Lane.
Have you ever seen yourself look anything like you do?
I've never seen myself look this glamorous, so I'm absolutely in awe of what she's just done in so little time as well. I think she's incredible. And I think all of these girls are really going to enjoy the transformation that they're all about to go through with her help.
It's right, it is a transformation. I think that's the key word. And I think people will see themselves completely differently. But hopefully feminine, pretty, but, you know, it's such a great look and the silhouette's just stunning, so I really want people to feel completely transformed. I love that, yeah. It's an absolute transformation. The great thing is that it suits all ages, you know, everybody looks good in this look. I mean, again, the look from the 40s was born out of austerity and not having very much, and women were able to do so much with so little. So it's about just trying things out. If you don't like it one way, change it up. It's about tailoring this to suit you, keeping it authentic and 40s, but also going away with something that you're really happy with that makes you feel good. You should leave here feeling fantastic.
Yeah, the 40s boutique was another way of bringing people into Bletchley Park who probably never thought about coming here.
I think it's fair to say we've been quite innovative this year in the way that we've brought the story out in different ways. So another way we've done that is through the interpretation in the huts with a soundscape. You just mentioned the soundscape that you pick up as you walk around the park. It goes one step further once you go into huts 3 and 6, where it's a ghostly presence almost, not in a creepy way, but you hear conversations, you hear machine sounds, and there are projections of local volunteers, not professional actors. These people stepped up to be part of Bletchley Park's history. Let's go and hear from them.
1939. Britain declares war. The great British public huddle around radios, listening to the news. They are preparing themselves in a very British fashion, watching and waiting and listening. A group of people that no one knows about or has even heard of is also listening. Listening to something quite different. The sound of secrecy.
And so how did you hear about this first off?
It's quite weird. I came to Bletchley about a year and a half ago just as a visitor. Then, because of the way it worked with the tickets, you could go for a year. I looked for some special events and I went to one which was the 40s weekend in May of last year and got some really good photos. So I went looking at the start of January for when it was on this year and then saw the news article and thought, well, the worst they can do is say no. And here I am.
And do you act? Is it something you're involved in?
Not directly. I help organise events around London that involve lots of actors, but I don't ever do any myself.
And have you fancied trying it before? Is this a real first step for you?
I guess this probably is a first step. I quite like the idea of it, but yeah, first time.
OK, so who have you been cast as? You appear to be a civilian.
It's actually my own clothes.
Oh, you are kidding. Well, then you're in the zone. Oh, what a clang, I'm sorry.
No,
you look great. You could step straight onto that set.
So I'm playing a mathematician today, I think that's the one. I'm doing that, and I'm also playing a watchkeeper, so I can't remember which way around it is. But, so yeah, basically, it's not going to be an enormous leap for me to play someone who's in their 20s as a mathematician programmer, considering that I am a programmer.
Right.
And I dress like this anyway, so...
It sounds like you're already aware of and quite interested in the history of Bletchley Park and what happened here.
Yeah, I've had quite an interest in it for a couple of years.
How do you feel about being part of the way we're going to tell that story?
Really excited. When I've told people that I was doing it, they've sort of gone, well, that's obvious, isn't it? Yeah, I'm really excited about it.
That's brilliant. And are you going to bring your family to have a look and see if they can spot you?
Yeah, that's the plan. I think there's quite a few of us going to come up around August time or something and have a picnic on the grass and do stuff. So.
Well, superb. Well, we thank you for doing this.
Cool. Well, thank you.
Talking to whom and where each station is located. Well...
And the sound of the typewriter comes from the typewriter. That's lovely.
Chance of working out what on earth the stations are saying.
And there's a girl huddling in a blanket to show you how cold it was in here in winter. It's very true. You feel like you've walked in on someone's memories. It's fantastic.
We've been here all the way through the work being done, but to finally see it finished was just, I think, amazing, wasn't it?
It took my breath away.
Just before we officially opened, there was a launch of a biography by Joel Greenberg about Gordon Welshman. And on the launch day, a number of Gordon Welshman's family came to visit. And we were here to actually take them into the office that their dad and their granddad and their great-grandfather worked in during World War II.
That must be such a personal and moving experience for anyone, for them to actually be able to step into his office because he was head of Part 6 and feel this level of atmosphere. It sends shivers down your spine.
Mind your step. For everybody's benefit, particularly for the Welshman family, the room behind me was Gordon's office. For the first 3 years of the war, he shared it with Stuart Milner Barry, and then when
I wouldn't remember, because remember, I was born after he left this office and wouldn't have remembered anything for several years.
Do you remember the pipe?
But the pipe, he kept always.
What's it like to think your father worked in here, didn't he?
It's just wonderful. It's really, and they've done such a nice job. I mean, the pipe, and he always loved a good fountain pen.
I just want to come and take a picture. No. Do you want one of yourself at Granddad's
desk? Possibly, yes. All right, I'll do it.
I'll just take one of the desks.
It is rather amazing, but of course it wouldn't be that desk, would it? No, all we know is it's this room. It's this the kind idea. Of it's the idea. Yeah.
I had a moment this year which was a bit like when you walk along a red carpet and everybody looks really disappointed because you're not a famous person. I walked out of Hut 6 shortly before the Duchess of Cambridge left. The visit was overrunning. It was wonderful. She was so engaged talking to the veterans that it overran, which is always a good sign on a royal visit. And I came out and the phalanx of photographers was here. And then everybody else that could possibly, you know, find their way to be here was lining the tennis courts as they are now and the route towards the mansion. Well, when I walked past, all I could think was, don't trip over, don't trip over. So I've never had such an audience, but I was a great disappointment to them.
Well, it's Royal Marine drill, so he'll be sliding his feet. It won't be a big smack, so it'll be far nicer.
I'm at Bletchley Park today for a very, very important special occasion. The visit of Her Royal Highness, the Duchess of Cambridge. The visit in total will last a good couple of hours. Gareth Lloyd is with me as well today. And we'll be hearing his reports as he makes his way with the Royal Party. A very, very proud day for Bletchley Park today and a proud day for the three counties. I say it so often on my programme that we sometimes just don't really appreciate the history that we've got locally. And this is a very, very important site for the whole nation. And just as a final thought, I was chatting to my little boy this morning, who, as you well know, is 6 years old. And I was saying to him, I'm going to an event today where the Duchess of Cambridge will be. And he said, wait, why are you going there? And I had to explain what Bletchley Park is. I loved telling him the story because he was completely in awe of it. He totally understood what they'd done here. And it just goes to show how important it is to engage the next generation in understanding our history. And that, again, is a very important part of the work that the team here at Bletchley Park are doing. They want to ensure that Bletchley Park remains resplendent for decades to come so that our children and our grandchildren can really get a sense of the history. Lots more still to come from here at Bletchley Park.
In this, I'm so pleased that you're interested in this because a while ago it was rather forgotten.
Exactly, and no one spoke about it. Did you find it very hard not being able to talk about your time and your experience?
Will you accept this? This is the book that my son and I have edited. It's the book by my late father, Ethel Paget. But it's quite interesting because it's got a lot about Bletchley. It's really about you see it, there's pictures in it.
Oh, lovely. Thank you very much. That's very kind.
Anyhow.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Will.
The more I can learn, the better. And I think that's what's so wonderful about the museum and having Bletchley now to the public is that everyone, all different generations, will learn about the wonderful work that you just did.
She was wonderful.
And you say engaged. That was what all of the veterans said to us, I think, on that day, didn't they?
She was very absorbed in each and every conversation, and particularly, I think, with Marion Boddy, who worked directly with her grandmother and her great aunt, and they were friends. And it was wonderful that she was able to talk to someone about the work she did here, because she didn't talk about it much herself before she died, because she was one of those stalwarts that kept to the secrecy. Of course, when they all signed the Official Secrets Act, they signed it for life. And many of them never shared those secrets.
Some of them still don't now.
That's right.
Gareth Lloyd is with the royal party. As I mentioned earlier on, there's a very personal visit here today as well for the Duchess because her grandma was one of the volunteers here.
Her Royal Highness has now made her way here to Hut 6, which was later named Hut 16. And this is the really special reason why the Duchess of Cambridge is here today, and that it's a real personal reason for her visiting Bletchley Park. Her paternal grandmother, Valerie Glassborough, later Middleton, worked here at the Government Code and Cipher School's top secret headquarters during World War II. And she worked alongside someone that Her Royal Highness is meeting now. Lady Boddy has been waiting patiently just in a room down from where I'm standing. And she worked with Miss Glassborough and also her twin sister as well, Mary. And so Lady Boddy is now talking to the Duchess of Cambridge and talking of her memories, talking about things she remembers.
She shared a rather special moment at Bletchley with me. It was the 15th of August, 1945. I think it was in the afternoon. Valerie and Mary and I and two other girls were on the day shift, which was rather fortunate because Commander Williams, our superior officer, came into the room smiling and he said, "Well done, girls. The signal has been intercepted from Tokyo to Geneva and the Japanese are surrendering." And we just sat there in complete silence and then Commander Williams shuffled about. And then he said, "Well, you bloody well get on with your work now." Which broke the ice. We all laughed. And then he did say, "A message has gone to the King and to the Prime Minister. And I'll come back when it's been confirmed because it cannot be announced until Geneva has sent on the message to London for very obvious reasons because they would have known we'd have been listening." It's something that I could never tell anybody that had happened to me. Obviously, because we were sworn to secrecy. But it was a great moment to feel that one must have been among the first people who knew that the war had finally ended. And I suppose, in a way, all the time I was at Bletchley, that was the moment that one remembers. And it's one that I've remembered all my life.
Your Royal Highness, all of us here at Bletchley Park take great pride and pleasure in your visit today. And on behalf of my fellow trustees and all my colleagues here at Bletchley Park, thank you for coming. This is an exceptionally important day for us here at Bletchley Park. It enables us to acknowledge the remarkable and the selfless work of the many thousands who served here in the cause of national defence and freedom in World War II. And of course, it's wonderful to be able to say that these thousands included your grandmother, Valerie Glassborough, and her twin sister, Mary, your great aunt. I also want to take the opportunity to note that how much this means to all those who, since 1991, have worked to save and then to develop Bletchley Park. For many years, it was a hard and unacknowledged struggle. And my fellow trustees, some of whom have worked here much longer than me, I think I know what they feel when they see the new visitor centre in Block C and the wonderful restored huts. This is just the first phase of our regeneration, please note everybody. But we already see how we are able to honour the wartime achievement, to recognise the exceptional spirit of technological innovation that in many ways began here in those difficult days and with all the consequences for our lives today, and how we can promote education and understanding now for our families and our children. The message is that in so many ways, Bletchley Park is directly relevant for the safety and our prosperity today. Your Highness, we are very proud of your visit. We are proud of your grandmother, of your great aunt and your family, and of the great British qualities which they represent. Integrity, discipline, commitment, simple patriotism. Your Royal Highness, I'm sure this visit today fills you with pride. Now, ma'am, as chairman of the Bletchley Park Trust, it is my pleasure to invite you to come into the garden to secure the planting of a tree. Most of the work's already been done. And to thank you once again for coming here.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's very, very kind words, really. Yeah.
What I did say to that sweet duchess, who I thought was so good at her job and so charming, and I said, well, don't forget that we were lucky enough to be here at the right time, in the right place. We were able to do what we did because of that. It may be the most important thing that any of us ever done in our lives. We didn't realise it at the time, but we do now.
Of course, the first people to see the restored huts and new Block C Visitor Centre and newly restored parkland had to be the veterans themselves. We used their memories to help us come up with the way we've interpreted these buildings. Because photography was banned, particularly in these smaller, earlier buildings, there was some stage photography later in the war in the brick blocks, which tends to be the pictures you see now, but generally cameras were banned on site. So we've gone with their memories and their recollections of what it was like, and we've made it real.
I think that was the thing for me, especially on the veterans preview, was being able to take some of the veterans around the huts that either they'd worked in or, in some cases, that they'd never managed to get into and have been waiting 70 years.
Bearing in mind that I wasn't ever working in a hut, I am still very impressed by the way that they've been renovated, because the atmosphere is there and the sense of the very difficult working conditions.
And I guess it's the same sort of furniture and things like that,
absolutely,
that you would have had where you were.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Tables and chairs, yes, all very basic.
You wouldn't have been allowed in one
no,
of the huts if
no,
you'd been
I wasn't, because, and that was the maddening thing. I had a friend who worked in here. She was a wren, and I used to wait for her here outside lunchtime, and I was not allowed in, come hell or high water, especially high water. I think it's beginning to rain. Shall we shelter? Now, I mean, just imagine working in here. It would have been very depressing working in here, wouldn't it?
I think you probably did better than your friend, Betty, working
in the mansion. Oh, I did. I mean,
it was
jammy for me. Absolutely wonderful. The only thing was that we had open wood fires and they had central heating here. but we didn't. And very often in the middle of the night the fire would go out and it wouldn't be relit. Oh yes, these awful chairs. The light's terrible, isn't it? For working in them.
Was it this dark in blockade for?
No, it wasn't, because that was purpose-built quite late on.
Was it all fluorescent lights then?
Or? Yes, the strip lights, yes.
I mean, that was such an honour to take Betty around that day. It was absolutely lovely to see her face and, you know, as she says, you know, I waited 70-odd years to go in here.
I think it transported them back in time, and to see how moved some of them were to revisit those memories so vividly over such a long period of time told us we'd pretty much got it right.
Yeah.
I've been here on a visit to the new C block, and I went from here to the newly refurbished Hut 6 and Hut 3, and I think they're superb. They really captured the atmosphere. You walk from room to room in the same dim light that they had to work from. You must remember everybody smoked and the windows didn't open because it had the blast walls. And so it must have been a fug. So it must have been like that. I think the reproduction of it is nothing short of brilliant. I went into the mansion, which I never did go in during the war, but in the mansion, the reproduction of the offices are so, again, the only word I can think of is atmospheric. They recapture the period. Everything seems to be of my days in the outfit. So I think all in all, full marks to Bletchley Park.
Thank you very much, Geoffrey. That means a lot.
The amount of detail and the amount of research that must have gone into this display, I'm very impressed. What more can I say?
It strikes me that there must be a huge difference between what you can see today and all the different stages of development that you remember over the last 23 years nearly.
Oh, yes. I mean, when I first came here, we were only open once a fortnight on Saturdays and Sundays, and all the huts were completely derelict. What's interesting for me is to see, for instance, inside Hut 6. Now, when I was working the bombs, I knew I was connected to one of the huts by this red voice-scrambling telephone, so that when we got a good stop, we would phone it through. But to actually see the inside of Hut 6 and listen to the people saying, oh, we've broken in, and jumping up and down, you know, in those days, it was just an impersonal red telephone. But in fact, there were real people at the other end of that phone, and this is where they were.
And is that the first time you've really been able to get a sense of that?
Indeed, because we never knew what went on. I mean, that was the whole deal.
You didn't go anywhere near it, did you?
No, nobody knew. And maybe the people in Hut 6 didn't know that their stops were coming from across the pavement either. When you give a talk or a story, you're only talking about your part, but then people can come out of your talk about the bomb, say if I'm doing a bomb demonstration, and they can go into that and see the other end of it rather than having to imagine it. And I think that's extremely valuable. It's a great addition to the park.
Every September we gather all of our veterans who want to come and celebrate what they achieved here and look back on their time here at the Veterans Reunion. This year it was busier than ever, which might come as a surprise with the passing of the years, but I think many of them waited to see what we'd done.
We'll take a couple more, so your best smiles. Okay, 3, 2, 1... Perfect, thank you very much indeed for all your hard work. Thank you, everybody else.
Bletchley Park has changed quite considerably.
Oh, yes.
What do you think about the changes?
Well, I think it's a good thing. But when we first came, it was very dilapidated, you know. And, I mean, it's grown so much and people are taking such an interest. But it's good to see what it was like, you know. I've just seen myself on the Roll of Honour.
Wonderful.
Yes. Some of my friends come up here to have a look. They said, oh, saw your name on the Roll of Honour. And I thought, oh, good, Joe.
Do you think it's important to keep places like Bletchley Park alive?
Oh, yes, I do, really, yes. I mean, it's like the First World War now. I mean, this business in London with all the poppies and everything, it's lovely to think they've remembered that. And I think this will perhaps be the same sort of thing.
All the contributions you've made,
yes,
you
yes,
and everybody
yes,
else.
Oh, yes, yes. Oh, I mean, pleased to think I've done something like this,
oh,
you know.
Absolutely.
Yes.
You were talking about the plans that you've made for 10 years. I don't want to be morbid, but I feel that the veterans may not go very much past 10 years. Exactly who are you aiming at with Bletchley Park in 10 years' time?
We're aiming at the visiting public, and there's, at the moment, 180,000 people each year. We want to expand that to even more people. Our mission here in saving the park and taking it forward is to educate future generations as to what went on here. And in exactly the same way, at the moment, there's a centenary of the First World War. Harry Patch, the last one, died nearly 10 years ago now. They are telling the story of that momentous war. Our job is to tell a part of the Second World War story long after you're gone. People can talk to you now and get your story. In 10 years' time, they may not be able to. Our mission is to tell your story in perpetuity.
We weren't actually working at Bletchley, but we were part of the bigger wheel that was. We were a listening station for Bletchley. We were the ones who intercepted the German wireless messages and sent them to Bletchley to be decoded. Bletchley, of course, was never mentioned. We were only 15 miles away, but if anyone had mentioned Bletchley, we couldn't have told them anything about it because we were sworn to secrecy in the first instance, and there was no way we would have. But we were probably one of the first wireless stations in 1939-40 to actually go up, because they would have been very anxious to find out what the Germans were planning and thinking. And our accommodation was extremely simple. It was like there must have been thousands of camps, probably just like it, but they were quite primitive in respect of probably what you would enjoy today. There was 12 beds on either side of this wooden hut with a black-bellied stove, which was the plague of our lives in the middle. There was no furniture as such, you know. There was no chairs or bedside tables or anything of that kind. The ablutions and bath out was at least 10 minutes away, but I wouldn't have missed my time there. And it's with great pleasure I'll come here today to be part of this.
The pulls on the clutch mechanisms just failed, so we've actually got a temporary one in. But Eric mentioned to me one of the things that failed on the bomb in the war was the same part, the pulls.
Yes. Don't ask me to repair it, because I wouldn't know how to do that.
But I just think it's lovely that,
yes,
you know,
a part that's failed.
Something goes wrong and you're here. Yeah, that happened to when I was there.
Yeah.
We've had another gentleman in, Paddy.
Paddy, yes, I spoke to him.
And he mentioned it to me as well.
Oh, did he?
He said, yes, he said,
yes,
the pulls did fail.
Yes.
So it's
well,
something we've
well,
not heard of.
Of course they do. I mean, nothing is infallible. All things fail occasionally, don't they?
Did you and Paddy serve together?
No, I didn't really actually know him. I knew a Paddy, but I don't think that was the one. But then it's very difficult, isn't it? I mean, these years hence, they're going to look different. Same with that, I'm looking different, you know.
Oh, I imagine you look as,
oh,
as
young
handsome
as
you did when you were married
6 years
ago.
I'm not saying I don't look handsome, I'm just saying I'm not as young.
I hope you've had a good day.
Thank you very much. Yes, we have indeed. Yes, thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Can I just say thank you for today, and thank you for the magazines, which are much appreciated.
When a family from Newcastle rocked up for a day out here back in August, they had no idea they were about to become Bletchley Park's 100,000th visitor of 2014, earlier in the year than ever before.
Bearing in mind that up till May, June this year, half the site was a building site. And we've hit those figures. It's remarkable. And that's even before Hollywood.
What did you do during the war?
I worked in a radio factory.
What did you really do during the war?
Are you paying attention?
If you speak a word of what I'm about to show you, you will be executed.
It's beautiful.
It's the greatest encryption device in history. The Germans use it for all major communications.
Everyone thinks Enigma is unbreakable.
Let me try and we'll know for sure.
Mr. Turing, do you know how many have died because of Enigma?
No, I don't.
Three. While we've been having this conversation.
What is it that we're really doing?
We're going to break an unbreakable Nazi code.
Oh.
To pull off this genius routine, one actually has to be a genius.
Why are you building a machine?
The machine will allow us to break every message and win the war.
You could help us, but you won't.
You will never understand the importance of what I am creating here.
I'm just a mathematician.
You've got more secrets than the best of them.
Sometimes it is the people who no one imagines anything of who do the things that no one can imagine.
Of course, they were actually here in 2013 for the filming that took place here. There wasn't much of it. It's a great job of illusion, the film. But most of that was not shot here at Bletchley Park, but the bar scenes were.
Also, Bletchley is a very busy place. It would be very difficult for us to take over for the weeks that we needed. But in the end, we did use the ballroom at Bletchley Park, which for part of the war was the place where Alan Turing, Joan Clarke and the others would have danced and drank. So that was incredibly important to us and we were very glad to be here. We'd had a last minute change of mind and one of our other locations that we were going to use as the ballroom scene, it didn't quite work out. So I went back to the director and the production designer, Maria, and said, what about Bletchley? It's there. It's a great location. It may be a little smaller for what we wanted, but I came back to Bletchley and spoke to Ian and Kelsey about this, and they said, yeah, please come. So we did, and it was very important for the actors, I think, because they felt such a sense of place. The crew also, and the studio, and the post-production people, they really saw that it really added something to the film. It just made it more authentic, and I think hopefully that does come through. And it's a lovely connection as well for Bletchley Park Trust themselves and Bletchley Park to be part of this, what should be a great film.
And in that very room, we've created the imitation game, the exhibition. So we have props and costumes and a peek behind the scenes at the film. And it's very atmospheric. You walk in on a red carpet. And if you haven't seen it yet, do. It's only on for a year.
The amount of props and costumes that Bletchley have managed to get, I think
the word that would be in popular culture now is that we rinsed them.
Yeah.
But of course, it's better to say they were very generous, but they were. Also, exclusive interviews with the cast and filmmakers talking about what it was like for them to film here at Bletchley Park and how they felt the history lived in the very walls and it really brought it home for them and it really mattered to them. So, of course, I want to know what it was like filming at Bletchley Park.
Amazing. It was amazing. I mean, what an extraordinary experience. I mean, obviously, as you guys know, I went around there a couple of times for research and you were amazing. You opened doors and were so patient with, struggling actor's brain to try and sort of encompass what cryptography really is and what really happened there. And to work in the environs where all this happened, where the people breathed, lived, loved, worked, struggled, kept secrets, were heroic, quietly, stoically, was really, really overwhelming. It was a very important part of the film. I think it wouldn't have felt right not to have had a moment with Bletchley Park featuring properly. And the parts that we were able to feature that were Bletchley were just magic moments in the filming sort of schedule. It really was very special. In Bletchley Park, everywhere you looked, you realised that this was the architecture, this was the sky, some of the trees being there way before any of them were even there. And it adds something from nothing. You really feel that you're playing slightly with ghosts as well.
I have wanted to write about Alan Turing since I was a teenager. It's always been a subject that's fascinated me. It may be sort of hard to imagine now because I'm so hip and cool. But as a teenager, I was fascinated by computer science. And so among computer science people, as you don't need me to tell you, Turing is this object of intense study and fascination. So he was always a figure that I was aware of and who had this fascinating life story that I always wanted to write about and always wanted to tell.
It's almost Shakespearean, but you couldn't make it up, his story. The triumph and the tragedy together.
I think that if I had pitched you the Turing story as sort of a fictional thing, you'd be like, no, there's too much there. There's too much story. You'd never believe that all that really happened to one person.
I would agree.
What's it like having been here, actually at Bletchley Park, where all this happened, filming some of the scenes?
Oh, it's a dream. I mean, I think it's so nice to have the opportunity to be here at Bletchley, where everything happened. And for us, it was very important as American writer, American producers, a Norwegian director, to both staff our entire crew and our cast with people from the UK, and to really do massive amounts of diligence in both our production design, our costume design, our locations. And there's no better location that we could think of than being at Bletchley to shoot The Imitation Game.
It was incredible filming at Bletchley Park. I think it's such a rare thing to be able to go to the actual real buildings and see the real huts and everything else. I'd already done a little research trip to Bletchley Park and rinsed all the resident mathematicians there for information. But it was great just to see all the replica bomb they have there and everything else. So it was great just to be within those walls.
We have been able to shoot part of the movie at Bletchley Park, and I think it was very emotional for all the actors and for all the crew to be there. And this is where it actually happened. This is where, you know, it took place. And also that just the fact that all the enigmas in the film are the actual enigmas from the war. Well, the actor was shocked when we, on the rehearsal, when we brought in the enigma for the first time and just touch it and, you know, just see it there. And then it's a great reminder that this actually happened. This helped save so many people, and it was such an important time, important for the war. So I think that having as much authenticity, having, you know, props, equipment, everything borrowed for Bletchley was very important.
You almost feel that you can feel the presence of all those incredible minds when you walk into the main building in Bletchley Park and where we filmed, you know, the bar. All of us felt that, you know, the hairs stand on end on our necks when we went in there because, you know, I'm pretty sure if you dusted that place, you'll still find the fingerprints of everyone that we played there somewhere. So, you know, it also brought home the responsibility we felt in portraying these characters and telling Alan Turing's story and telling it to the very best of our ability and bringing to life a story that people really don't know and really should know about this incredible man and the incredible work done at Bletchley Park.
These interviews were the interviews that you got with them at the press junket.
The film company were extremely generous to give us that time because, of course, they wanted maximum media coverage, and to help us with this exhibition was very generous. And before I even sat down, Benedict Cumberbatch, now this is obviously the one I was most nervous about because there's most pressure on that time. So this was an entire exhibition for a year, an edition of our magazine. This podcast and all of our promotional publicity about this exhibition all rested on 5 minutes in a hotel in London in a room with Benedict Cumberbatch.
One of probably 50 people he'd see that day.
He was in huge demand, of course. So if I was going to fall off any list, it would be that one. Yeah. So I was thrilled that I still got that time. And before I even sat down, it was a really strange moment. It didn't register with me at first that he was asking me what we thought of the film, and it was really important to him.
What did you think?
Are we ready?
What did you think?
Yes, we are now.
Oh, fantastic.
Did you enjoy it?
Yes, very much.
Oh, good.
Brilliant.
Well, have lots of Bletchley Park people seen it yet? Or
yes. Yeah, everybody loves it.
Yes?
Yes, yes.
Oh, that's such a relief. That's such a relief.
The authenticity and the passion he brought to that role was just breathtaking. And Keira Knightley was great as well. I mean, we all talk about Benedict Cumberbatch because he plays the titular role, but actually, she was great as well. And now it's nominated for 5 Golden Globes, no less.
6 minutes. Is that even possible?
No. It takes me 8. This isn't about crossword puzzles. It's about how one approaches solving an impossible problem. Do you tackle the whole thing at once or divide it into small... You finished?
Yes.
Five minutes and 34 seconds.
You said to do it in under 6.
Again, it's the detail that's gone into these props. I mean, one of the major ones, pretty much a coup, I would imagine, is the bomb, or as they call it in the film, Christopher, which is an approximation of the bomb, really.
And it's spectacular. The detail is incredible. It's a bit sort of steampunk, as bombs go.
Yeah.
It uses some dramatic license, obviously, and a great deal of technical attention to detail, of course.
It's a film. It's not a documentary about Bletchley Park. We didn't expect it to be. What it is, it's a really, really good thriller. And yes, characters aren't exactly as they were in history, but that's because to tell a story in 2 hours, you have to have composite characters.
It boils down lots of people and their important work. But again, it's about capturing the essence. Don't forget to come and see this. This exhibition is only running until the end of October 2015.
And there's nowhere else you're going to get to see so many of Benedict Cumberbatch's costumes.
That's right, among other things.
So there we go. We've taken you on a complete circuit of Bletchley Park.
We're back at the start, almost ready to go back into the warmth and perhaps have a look around the gift shop. So next year, there'll be even more to see as we bring out new exhibitions. Exciting news to come in January, not to be announced just yet. But later in the year, we'll bring you an exhibition all about code-breaking in World War One. Some of the people who were involved in code-breaking in World War One became very important here in World War Two and were part of that great big seismic change where it became an industrialised process. So we'll look into that.
People like Tiltman.
And Dilly Knox.
And Dilly.
Once the World War One exhibition is open in Block C next year, you'll be able to leave here and go to the other bookend of this story, where we go into today and the future in our Secrecy and Security, Keeping Safe Online exhibition, which makes you think about things like passwords.
That's been 2014.
What a year. Fantastic.
Who knows what next year's going to hold?
We know a little bit of what next year will hold.
But I can't tell you. It's a secret.
Yes, exactly.
We're keeping Bletchley Park traditions alive and well and keeping secrets.
Watch this space.
Unique angle to come at it from, that you're actually comparing it to what the Germans had planned, or not planned as it seems you're finding.
Well, the thing was, of course, with the German side, you see, really, it's...
I thought it was only knocked 3 times on the pipes.
I thought it was too, yes.
Say something.
Hello.
Hello, 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 hello.
Hello, hello. Probably be about this level. Welcome to Bletchley Park Podcast's review of 2014.
Christmas special.
Christmas special. Okay.
What are you doing? Interviewing yourself?
Yeah.
Is this your Christmas special?
Oh. What I was about to say
Heck
was...
the Halls with Balls of Holly.
Yeah.
Or by humbug.
You know that's going in the Christmas special, don't you?
For the videos that are in some of the...
Merry Christmas.
So one of the other things... Don't start laughing. Don't start corpsing.
I've never had such an audience, but I was a great disappointment to them. She was wonderful. No, I don't mean Eloise. I mean the Duchess of Cambridge. She's so lovely.
You could understand.
Never quiet here.
You could understand it when the building was going on. Should we walk a bit closer to the house? And the detail that's gone into some of those props. I mean, for example, there's...
That was the door, not me.
That's the thing. The film isn't a documentary. And, I mean, I, you know, we... Yeah, the vet... Actually, can we turn around the other way? Actually, we don't. I'm just thinking, very quick, let's go,
Thanks to the paid and volunteer staff, veterans and visitors who took part in this podcast. For more information, go to bletchleypark.org.uk, find us on iTunes and Twitter, where we are at BPark Podcast, and join our Facebook group. Thanks to Audio Boom, who make this podcast possible. This podcast is produced for the Bletchley Park Trust by MC Fontaine. And if you like the Bletchley Park podcast, don't be shy, write a review on iTunes. Thanks for listening, and we'll have more decrypts from the home of the Codebreakers next month.